apologize to Jerry for missing half of his talk, but it was for a good cause. And so what I'm trying to do here is tell you about boosted searches in Atlas. So how far have we gotten applying all the wonderful tools that people have been thinking of? And I'll try to show you that they work. Right, that's spoiling the surprise a bit, but that is one of the conclusions. And I'll try to indicate why they work, and right, that might give you some guidance for other applications. Right, what are the right ingredients? What do you need? What are the requirements for these things to really give us more physics with the same data set? So it's very focused on TOPS. I think, but that is justified by me working on TOPS mostly. But I think it also makes sense because it is one of the areas where we've gone furthest maybe in applying this. We've gone full cycle applying these techniques, and it is a good time to do a postmortem and see what worked and what didn't, how it can work better. I have some slides on what we should be boosting next, but I don't know, those are beyond the 50th slide or so. So we may not get to that point. So introduction, you don't need this, I think. I put this in for people who pick up the talk on the web. There are a few excellent introductions and reports that you should be reading if you want a general introduction. I've given a few seminars that were a bit more detailed than this one is, so you could pick those up as well. So essentially, to kick off, or the LHC is forcing us to organize workshops like this. Right? It's the first time we have to worry about jet substructure and boosted objects, apart from TAUs maybe that were boosted a long time ago. This center of mass energy, even if it's not quite what we ordered, can really be. We did a diejet resonance search with 350 inverse nanobarns, which was a few weeks in 2010. And that was competitive with everything the Tevatron had done, right? It's an amazingly powerful machine for this type of things. The parton luminosity goes up by orders of magnitude with respect to previous machines. So we have nice data sets, over 20 inverse femtobarn this year. And we have had looks at essentially all the standard model processes that you would care to look at, down to picobarn level. So definition of a boosted object, I don't think you need that. So for top, as a rule of thumb, you can take a 400, 500 GV top, and that you could capture in a single jet. You'd have to make the jet quite large, but then typically the top and the antitop are quite nicely separated, and boosted algorithms start to make sense. So that is setting the scale. There is great promise in boosted objects. I don't know, some people go very far, but...
this is not a figure from that paper.
No. I just wanted to put the two most extravagant claims about boosted objects on the page. I don't even know what it is, but it does exist. If you Google it, you'll find it.
You can find a lot of things.
Right. So, but we hoped that boosted Higgs, right, this is what triggered a lot of activity in the field, and we still haven't done it. So I don't have any slides on an analysis doing boosted Higgs with jet substructure. Of course, the Higgs to BB bar searches are using PT as a way to categorize the events, and that gives us some of the power that was actually proposed in this paper, but we haven't done the substructure search yet. Right, one more word about why we need to worry about boosted objects in the LHC rather than 10 years ago at the Tevatron. This is top quarks, and I've put MTT bar greater than 1 TeV as the fraction of events where boosted algorithms matter. And the Tevet run, they roughly had 25 of those, so you wouldn't do many physics analysis with them. And they had zero events that I've labeled as highly boosted. And our current data set has tens of thousands and a few hundreds of those categories. So we really have the first sample that mankind has ever had of boosted top quarks, and I'll show you how we've been using them. Of course, if we go to the design energy, I've put 13 TeV, didn't want to be too optimistic. That gives you millions of these boosted top quarks and tens of thousands of really highly boosted ones, and the very LHC, so a very high energy machine. I don't think we have to worry about that today, but that will be a true factory. So then we need substructure to identify these boosted objects for us. And for a long time, jets have been very little more than a three vector, essentially, right? People cared about PT, eta, and phi. And that's where knowledge, useful knowledge about a jet ended. And that will have to change. I think we have the calorimeters to do it. And if you look at some of the event displays from older experiments, right, a jet was just essentially an energy measurement, and that's it. Atlas, if this pointer worked, I would point to that event display there, right? You have quite a detailed information, thank you, David, on what is going on inside the jet. So, right, you have a very granular liquid argon system, and even the hadronic system is granular with respect to previous experiments. So we know quite well what's going on. And of course, people have studied this in the past, and also in Atlas and CMS, people have done things like this, right? How is the energy distributed over the jet radius? We need to go a bit beyond that to do all the things we wanted. And one of the first papers that Atlas did on this was a measurement, a standard model measurement of jet substructure unfolding for detector effects. And then you find that error bars are quite large. So we can measure jet mass of a fat jet, but we don't know the jet mass scale very well at this point. You see two randomly picked generators. One does pretty well, the other doesn't do very well at all. So you can tell we were just learning to walk here, I think, right?
This plot's labeled wrong, isn't it? This is the statistical uncertainty of the light loop. That's the wrong way around. It says systematic.
Isn't it the official plot?
Yeah, this is from the paper, but the label's wrong. Isn't it? I mean, that's true. There's no way that the systematic uncertainty is that.
That'd be embarrassing. No, we were very confused, and I forget, somebody corrected. Actually, it was you. Yeah.
No, but one is...
It's wrong.
It's wrong. Okay, the statistical error is the inner band.
You made this plot, if I remember rightly.
But is it right in the Cambridge-Achman one?
I'll have to check.
That would be... Okay. Yeah. So the systematical error on this is large. Statistical error in this bin isn't very important. So I think my conclusion from this was that the time was ripe for doing searches with this, but the conclusion of other people was that a lot more work was needed to actually get the full potential out of this type of observables, where jet mass is just a placeholder for any substructure observable you can care about. Pylab, this was a 2010 paper, and we had six pylab vertices sometimes. But already there, you got 3 GeV per vertex. So on a 50 GeV jet, it's easy to get a pylab-induced mass that is of a similar order. So I think this plot made us quite aware that pylab is a problem and has to be dealt with. Now we're going to tops. This is a motivation slide, and you don't need to believe that the top is composite or that it's too heavy to be a standard model particle, right? You don't need to believe this plot particularly, but I think for this talk, for this substructure workshop, we can just use top because it's the best studied boosted object that there is. So we'll take it, even if you don't believe there are TTBR resonances out there, that doing these TTBR resonance searches is a good test bench for boosted top quark reconstruction, and in general might tell us something about boosted objects. These are a few events. You get an early event, which has no obvious boosted tops in there, of course. TTBR mass of 800 GeV, one gets, I would say we can distinguish here, especially in this plot, by the top and an anti-top, they're nicely separate. And the radiation or the energy deposits from each of the top and anti-top candidate is quite confined to a narrow region. These we'd actually found with a classical algorithm and then just apply the boosted algorithm on top. So we were pretty sure they were tops and they got certified as the first boosted top quarks. Since then, we've found TTBR events with over 2 TeV. So I think we can safely say we've seen boosted top quarks, and we'll see what we can extract in terms of new physics searches. The first TTBR resonance search in Atlas that was to apply boosted techniques, we ran on the lepton plus jets final state. Of course, from a substructure point of view, fully hadronic is maybe more interesting. It's more challenging, but this is a slightly more sensitive channel for searches. Of course, you get a lot of control over the QCD background from just having the lepton. And instead, you have to worry about W plus jets, which is our dominant background. And with a reconstruction and selection that is based on a fat jet for the fully hadronic top, and essentially a standard reconstruction with a small jet, the lepton and a neutrino on the other hemisphere, we were not quite able to reduce W plus jets to the level we'd wanted. And one of the reasons is this distribution here. So this is a top mass peak. It's the fat jet mass of the candidate for the fully hadronic top decay. And it's very broad. And pileup wasn't as bad as it is now, but still with untrimmed anti-KT10, one really doesn't get very good mass resolution. So we couldn't cut very hard on the fat jet mass. We had pretty large errors on the mass scale at the time. So you don't want to cut too hard on this observable either. So in the end, that really reduced the strength of this approach. We didn't apply a B tagging. In a later iteration, we actually did that. And then you get the systematics of both the B tagging uncertainties for high PT jets and the jet mass scale uncertainties. So I think we're still trying to find a way of making the substructure selection so powerful that we don't need B tagging, but we don't get large systematics from that. When we compare that at the same data set with the same group of people and the same assumptions on all the systematics, a more classical search was done. And I compare the expected limits here. The expected limits are a bit easier to compare because they fluctuate less due to data bumps and excesses and things. This is the dilepton search that is not very sensitive due to branching fractions, essentially. This is the resolved search, and the boosted search is the light yellow. So in the regime where we're interested in, so beyond the TeV or so, we could clearly gain sensitivity by using this approach. That sort of convinced everyone that we should be doing both, because we do need to constrain this region as well, so the resolved search is still running, but that the boost hit algorithm is definitely the way to go for the high mass regime.
I must admit, I actually don't think I've seen this part before. It was the same one, the bottom right, was the same one made for the narrow width for the Z column?
No, the numbers are all in paper, so you can pick them up.
Yeah. But just the plot itself.
No, I think the plot only exists here, and there are a couple of reasons that I don't remember now. I made this plot, so I should. But
no, it's a nice plot.
I think the Z prime search goes down a bit lower.
I think the difference between the boosted and the non-boosted search for the Z prime is a little bit smaller.
But yeah, if you look at the observed limits, right, a few events in the bin can set you off. So you should do it with the expected limits to start with. It's not a huge gain, right? If you translate this in mass reach for this KK gluon that you can or cannot believe in, it's 100 GeV or 200 GeV or so. But right, considering this, that this was a primitive application of these techniques, I think it was sufficient to show that they can work.
I wouldn't be saying that. You discovered a KK gluon at 1.4 GeV.
Yeah. So the iteration with the full data set of last year brought up S-peak. It's still broad, but maybe the good news is that it's correctly modeled within the level of uncertainty that we have here. Our Monte Carlo is able to produce boosted tops with the correct mass distribution. B-tagging gained us some overall improvement of the signal to background ratio, but in the tail we're still suffering. That gives us a sensitivity to the W plus Z modeling that we really do want to get rid of. So even if we had a lepton, right, we really need to work harder to get Z substructure to get rid of all the standard model backgrounds. This iteration also had a combination of the resolved and boosted selections. So the logic was we try the boosted selection. If that works, we keep the event there. Otherwise, it can go for another round. And if it applies or if it makes a resolved selection, then it gets picked up there. We keep the two data sets orthogonal, and then combining the limit is a statistical exercise. Right? So there might be smarter ways of combining it, but I think this does give us the sensitivity in the low mass region that we want, and it does give the priority to the boosted search for the high mass region that we're interested in. Fully hadronic came slightly later. So here there's only one background, it's multi-jets. And this is now, instead of something that is already a bit awkward, to be known as the Atlas top tagger, right? The previous search just has a cut on jet mass and square root of D12, and that's all there is. This paper actually has the HAP top tagger and template top tagging. I'm showing the results for the HAP top tagger. Two of the authors of this are in the audience today as well. So if you have any questions in detail about those, you should be asking. The sensitivity, even if fully hadronic, is really a form of masochism. It is a much harder final state to get through to the tops in the first place. But it has a sensitivity that is comparable. It's not as good as the lepton plus jets final state, but it does have some sensitivity here. So this works. And if you put it all in one table, you can compare the limits here. Right? You can just keep the KK gluon as our benchmark. So you get to nearly 2 TeV with the full 2011 data set. And the boosted is, the fully hadronic is only slightly behind. Right, with just, no one is proposing to do just resolved analysis anymore, but we wouldn't have gotten this far, definitely. CMS has a similar plot. So also there you have exercised these. They have actually pretty good results on the all hadronic search. So I think both collaborations are ready to claim that boosted top searches gain us more sensitivity than if we wouldn't have invented all this, which of course you all knew already 5 years ago, but it's nice to see it confirmed. Right, and the reasons why this works is if you really reconstruct the top quarks with the standard techniques for a cross-section measurement, the acceptance is really an issue. At high PT or high mass, it just drops. Right, these algorithms isolate their leptons in a way that isn't very intelligent if you know that a B-jet might be coming very close to the lepton. And they're essentially looking for a topology that just isn't realized. Right? The number of jets, all these cuts are intended for this area around here. And for the muon channel, we have actually managed to get something that is pretty flat versus M. So this is the mass of the resonance, and the efficiency doesn't drop. It's not quite true for electrons. And that is because you can never choose not to isolate your electron at all. The identification of the electron close to a jet is an isolation in itself. So we managed to stabilize the acceptance. You might actually, if you didn't B-tag, you might actually be able to keep it growing up to 3 or so TeV. So that was a basic thing that we should get right, and the boosted algorithm make that requirement. And we need control over the backgrounds. And I've already mentioned that we're not doing as well on W plus jets as we'd have hoped. So then you have to convince the world that this W plus jet shape is modeled correctly in your Monte Carlo. And we can get at the overall normalization of this plot by looking at the charge asymmetry of the leptons in the event. Right, for W you expect a net charge asymmetry. But the shape is essentially Monte Carlo plus some confidence gained by this type of exercises. So here we've inverted a couple of cuts, and we find a region that's dominated by W plus jets. And we see the high mass, so the TT bar mass of these W plus jets events is actually pretty close to what the Monte Carlo predicts. So if anyone is worried that W's are radiated of the Parton shower and that's not in the Monte Carlo, it is true, right? We don't model that correctly. But it's not a factor 2 or 10 in the tail here.
To some extent, that's included when you're running algebra.
W is radiated of quarks, or is in there, but not in the Parton shower, right? As soon as Pythia takes over.
Yeah, it's not in the Parton shower, but you set up the configurations with this sort of thing, with this sort of finance, with the W's radiated of the quarks.
But you don't read some electric logs.
You don't read some electric logs. That's an issue everywhere. Sure. Even just the diagent mass, plain diagent mass. What you don't read some is the interplay between the electroweak and the QCD logs. But as long as you're not looking for jet substructure or things like that on the side where the W is radiated, that probably isn't too much of an issue. Why? I mean,
I'm confused here. Why in the hadronic case you just have no background other than TT bar? And here you're essentially entirely dominated by double distress and TT bar, so TT bar continuum is not.
No, this is the control region, so we deliberately enriched in W plus jazz. And
well, but also, I mean, Gregor and Sebastian can smack me, but I think in the plot you're thinking of, multijet effectively includes hadronic W plus jets because it's a data-driven estimate.
But it's still tiny. It's still a small fraction of the TT.
Yes.
Of TT bar. I mean, we'll see the TT, I guess we'll see. I'll postpone the question to...
We did this plot because we had exactly this question. And it would have been nice if a theory answer was available, right? How much of W is radiating off jets do we really get? And how well do we know that number? How worried should we be? It took us about a month to answer that question. And if that would have been available somewhere in a paper, maybe it is and we just missed it. I think it might come back again later. So if there is an answer that people can give, right? How big a problem is this? Can we estimate it? Can we show it's irrelevant?
Well, part of it I think might be that here you're required. Well, I forget which cuts you did exactly here, but. The TT bar case, you're requiring, generally speaking, a tag on both sides.
Mm.
Whereas it's very unlikely that you get a W radiated on both sides. I mean, it's basically nothing, right? The question might be more important for W prime to TB search, where you're only looking for one top tag, for example.
Right. I think this analysis is not very sensitive, in fact, but I'd like to have the numbers in hand next time they ask. But because the W must produce the lepton, and if it's right in the center of a jet, so one answer could be that, right? If those leptons from W's are never isolated, and then we're done, essentially. But I'm not sure if we can show that at all. So one of the reasons that this works is that we actually find a way to do the right thing for ISR and FSR. So if we're looking for a heavy object decaying to TT bar, we want the FSR in our mass and we don't want the ISR. And the resolved algorithm, which just finds a number of jets among all the jets available in the event and only has mass requirements to try to pair them back together, has to do all kinds of tricks to distinguish ISR from SSR and sum the right jets back into the heavy resonance candidate. While the boosted algorithm essentially captures all the FSR that is close to the top candidate, that happens to be roughly the right thing to do. So this is something I did yesterday. For 500 GeV, FSR can actually be quite far from the top, and we don't always get it right. ISR is not very different either. But if the resonance mass is large enough and the tops get quite boosted, FSR is typically very close to the parent top. And so with an R of 1, you could hope that you get most of the FSR, leaving out most of the ISR. And actually, the algorithm would be optimized for exactly this problem, even if we didn't know we had done it. Again, this is a math graph exercise. It would be nice to see if one could make this more quantitative with a full calculation. Then, I should be showing mass resolution plots, but we only have...
Was there a data cut on the TT bar?
Not in these plots.
Not in these
no.
Not.
It's a pretty heavy resonance here, so it is central, but I didn't require it to be. So one should expect the T2-bar mass resolution then to be better for the boosted algorithm than for the resolved algorithm. And these plots, well, if you know how to read them, they do actually show that. But it is all made a bit more difficult by the fact that the resonance itself has a pretty large tail towards low mass, and the colors and the masses don't match. If you look at it for some time, you can tell that the boosted algorithm, if it gets things wrong, it tends to err towards the conservative side. So it tends to leave some energy out of the resonance candidate. While in the resolved analysis, you actually quite often promote a standard model threshold or close to threshold TT bar event into the high mass tail by adding up ISR, which you shouldn't. So this, right, of course, promoting low mass events to the tail is much more dangerous for a resonance search than occasionally losing some high mass event. So this happens to be a great asset for T2-bar resonance searches, and I don't think we quite realized that it was until we'd done it. So now we're going to iterate on this further, and we'll want to, in every iteration, include improvements. So from the simple top tagger, we'll be making things more sophisticated. And there's some guidance as to what is important in this kind of tables. Again, it may take some time to really understand what it all means. Right, we see that the largest systematic uncertainty on the background yield is the energy and mass scale of the fat jet. And that is, right, we propagate a number and certainty of 5 to 7%. On the mass of a jet, you get a large difference in the yield. B tagging is important, so as I said, if we could get rid of the B tagging by improving our substructure analysis, that would be very welcome. Now, you should take this table with a bit of care, because not always is a difference in the background yield very dangerous, right? As long as the shape remains the same and it's a pure normalization issue, a bump hunt will actually not suffer very much from that. Of course, we would also like to have some sensitivity for broader resonances or for some things that are just a mild increase in the tail or something like that. And there we want to normalize as well as we can. But depending on what you want to do, some things may or may not be important. But clearly, jet mass is something that we should be attacking in the next iterations. So you know this much better than I do. We have several options to try to improve our jet mass performance, and Atlas has opted for trimming, or at least the T2-bar resonance searches have. Right, it gives us a better mass resolution, which is important, so we can tighten the cuts. It gives us less sensitivity to pile up, which is not so important again in terms of the pile up uncertainty or the pile up systematic, because that's quite small. But it is very important to keep this resolution as good as possible. The trimming definitely is something that needs to be included, and it is in the next iteration that is under approval now. But still, the basic mass scale, if you look at the plots in several conference notes from the jet substructure group, this is the energy scale uncertainty. And it, for the relevant regime, it is really percent level ready. And these are the jet mass scale uncertainties without and with grooming. And we're nowhere near this 1%. And we don't even see a clear improvement in the jet mass scale uncertainty. And I would have expected, right, where jet mass, ungroomed, relies very heavily on modeling correctly all the soft stuff, we should get the groomed mass roughly correct.
But so, I mean, this is a little bit unfair, right? Because this is just the plain gamma plus jet type balance uncertainty. Whereas actually in an analysis, they also include like uncertainties for flavor composition, close by jets, all this stuff, which actually bumps it up to more like 3 or 4%. Whereas we basically, for the mass, because we're less sophisticated, this is all of that. This is equivalent to all of those.
In fact, it's even worse than that, because the close-by jet uncertainty is kind of like what
it's actually derived using this track jet technique. So it's almost, just by construction, you get the same number if your jets are close.
It's just being provided.
Yeah, I know. But it's unfair to claim that we have a 4% jet mass uncertainty, but a 1% jet energy uncertainty for the same sample jet strength.
Right. You would have to put in all the additional uncertainties. There's also B-jets in my events, right? And then compare those. And then the difference is less pronounced. But still, right, I'm not fully convinced that the mass scale uncertainty is really the same in groomed and ungroomed jets. Or whether we simply haven't been able to constrain it to the level.
Well, that's absolutely true, because I mean, a big component of this is, I mean, without like tracking everyone, there's a lot of discussion about this, is the efficiency, your understanding track, which is the equivalent of whatever gel.
Right, there is an intrinsic uncertainty, and there's how well you can constrain it. And
I think a good follow up question to this is, you know, why are we not, or can we, and what are the limitations to using exactly the plots you showed earlier, the top mass peak, right? The updated one with better statistics seemed to suggest we know that distribution better than 5-6%. Can we incorporate that information?
Right. So, yeah. There must be better ways to constrain this than track jets. I'm not sure. Am I allowed to show those plots?
Yes, you are.
Okay.
Okay.
So this is not.
There's a plot over.
Yeah, the top right one you're allowed to show. The bottom right one not.
Yeah. It's, so please look at the right corner there.
They both say a channel.
Yeah, right.
You have to leave now, Gabby.
So this is the W mass peak in TT bar events. So it's mildly boosted tops. The W is sufficiently boosted that you can capture it in a single jet. And right, Monte Carlo and data seem to peak in the same position, and you can fit both, and you can constrain the jet mass scale. And I think this plot already shows that you can do better than the 4%.
This is
only that. Yeah. So people who did this are in the room. So any questions? So yeah, as it is a theory and experiment workshop, I think we'll get to an experimental control over the jet mass scale that will keep on improving with time. It would be nice to calculate, right? Essentially, we'll be tuning our Monte Carlo and they'll give the right predictions, but it would be nice to calculate jet mass and other observables from first principle, and there are some brave attempts here. I don't think that, right, any of these are competing with Pythia at the level that they describe the data at this point. But one might be able to improve our understanding of the Parton shower in the longer run, thanks to this kind of effort. This is a plot from one of those papers, and the best agreement with our data is still Pythia, I'm afraid. So what should we be boosting next? People have done B prime to WT, and this was one of the first analyses actually, and it did boosted objects without substructure, so it just used the boost of the W's to pair up the small jets with a cone criterion. it works. And in terms of doing searches, this was probably the right thing to do because they got the result out well before any of the systematics would have been available. Of course, one could repeat this kind of analysis with a better pairing of the WJET candidates using a JET algorithm again. W prime to TB is high on the list. Everything is there. We just haven't done it yet. But if you use the lepton isolation that we've already developed for the T2-bar resonance searches, I think that should gain quite a lot for this analysis. You don't need anything else. T2-bar H, I think, is high on the list, and a lot of people are expressing interest in this in Atlas. And this is a plot from a paper by Michael Spanofsky and Gavin. And contrary to what we've been finding with more primitive ways of pairing up the jets into candidates for top and anti-top and Higgs, the authors claim that they have no problem with the combinatorial background. There's a lot of distributions that are sufficiently different between signal and background. And that's exactly what this needs, because all the studies with this, the more standard reconstruction, show that we simply cannot do this. The background and the signal become so similar that it becomes a counting experiment with a pretty bad signal over background ratio, and backgrounds like DTBB bar that are pretty hard to predict. So unless we get this to work, it might be very hard to get this channel to produce a particle that we know to be there, right? So this is an obvious one. Yep. Okay. And one of the things I want to do is take this from searches to measurements. And the distinction between a search and a measurement is not always very clear. In some sense, the measuring the T2-bar spectrum fully corrected and giving that over to theorists might be the most efficient way of running a search. As long as we can constrain all the normalization well enough, they can do the limit setting on n exotic models. And essentially, we only use our models as benchmarks anyway. So I think doing a cross-section measurement of d sigma dm, d sigma dpt is quite natural. I think the charge asymmetry measurement is something that should be done also with the boosted selection. So partly that is because the models that people have come up with that explain the Tevatron anomaly, or what you want to call it, they predict very large asymmetries for some of these models. So if you want to rule them out at a 2-3 sigma level, a cut on T2-bar mass of 800 GeV is definitely the thing we should be doing. There's another reason, and that is that in the standard measurement, we quite often pair up the jets incorrectly. And then you get this migration matrix. So the generated delta Y of top and anti-top has a very faint relation with the reconstructed one. And if you boost the top quarks, that problem just goes away. You don't have to be smarter. You just let the boost do the work. You just pair up the jets that are close together, or you reconstruct them as a single jet. And then this matrix really turns into a nice diagonal. So this dilution of the charge asymmetry, which leads to large systematics once you've corrected it, is just gone if you do it with boosted top quarks, provided you use an algorithm that's thought out for them. CMS has a nice study that I wanted to mention here, but for the sake of time, I'll skip it. This is the search that Jay has been talking about, but this is looking for SUSY, assuming that there's no signal in 3 or 4 jet events, but that there is in 9 or 10 jet events. Now you need to predict the missing energy template from those low multiplicity events and transfer it to the signal region. And the reason this works is that the ET miss resolution is dominated by experimental effect, especially for QCD. And so independently of the number of jets, you'll get a similar ET miss distribution for a given HT, so the sum of overall objects. And this really allows you to produce a template that is very precise for something that is essentially unpredictable, right? And then they normalize them with some control region where, again, there is no SUSY. And this analysis is really quite powerful in excluding heavy gluinos, etc. And it works because we're so successful at producing this template. So I think Friday is the day we'll be discussing that. And this would be a good analysis to see if we can do something as good as this for substructure. And there are some issues there. I think we'll have to think about it. So that's this is Jay. So that's for Friday. We won't solve it right now. I think
that's
maybe
not what we meant by provocative.
It's informal. So one thing that we've done only to some extent is look at the jet mass spectrum and look if we see any bumps on that. There is an R parity violating SUSY search that David is involved in, I think. But I think this is an obvious thing to do, and for some reason we haven't quite gotten around to doing it. So maybe we need some motivation from theorists. The exact way of doing this is not completely clear to me. We could just do a measurement and again let the theorist set the limits. Or
that's pretty much exactly what we did. The reason we didn't use the whole shape spectrum is because of the color flow in the final state. It's just unwieldy.
Right. So how powerful, my question here is, how powerful is just unfolding the inclusive mass spectrum like we did in 2010 with the full data set?
Yeah.
Is there any model that would suffer from that? We'll have to see if a theorist comes around with a model. So I think Atlas has proven, and CMS has done pretty much the same in parallel, that booster techniques can help gain sensitivity. You get more physics out of the same data set. And that was with really Stone Age jet substructure. And we continue to improve our tools, and we'll continue to improve our sensitivity. I think in Atlas, the set of searches that is using this, there's a bit of a boosted boom in Atlas going on, and more groups are interested in using some of these IDs to avoid the dreariness of iterating the same analysis over and over again. Right, I think on the next year or so, I would like to move towards measurements of boosted object production rates as opposed to searches. That again may bring with it some theoretical requirements. Are we sure that we won't get flak on the grooming procedures if we do it for a cross-section measurement? I think we should be finding the Higgs boson both associated with W's and with TT bar using substructure techniques. I think more emphasis should go into fully hadronic final states. The proposal by Jay is a clear example. We could discuss looking on the jet mass spectrum itself. And a lot of performance work will be ongoing in the next 2 years to prepare for another jump in quantum luminosity at high energy. So that's all I have to say today. Thank you.